You are listening to The Dr. Kinney Show, and I'm your host, Erin Kinney, a naturopathic doctor and speaker who's passionate about teaching you how to understand what is happening in your body, why your body is reacting the way it is, and how to make the appropriate changes in your life to get your body back into balance. Something I've learned from my private practice is that the more patients know about their health, the more likely they are to make better diet and lifestyle choices, which ultimately leads them to a faster recovery. Each week, you are going to learn actionable tips, tricks, and teachings from myself, along with the help of top experts in the holistic health community, so that you can make better informed decisions about your body and your healthcare. Let's get started. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the Dr. Kinney Show. This week, I'm really pleased to have joining me Joshua Cameron, who is a master healer, and we're going to have a really cool chat about how the body expresses certain traumas and how the body essentially keeps the score. So Joshua, thank you so much for being on the show today. I'm excited to have this chat.
Yeah, I appreciate you holding the space and having me here, and I'm excited to see where this conversation goes.
Yeah. So can you start by sharing with my listeners kind of how did you get into this line of work?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a long time coming. I was born into a bit of a spiritual family, at least on the periphery of my grandparents. I didn't really believe it at the time because I was around people who would really scoff at it. But I had a lot of childhood trauma. My mom was drowning in the bottom of a bottle. My dad was pretty much checked out after he got divorced from my mom at two. The stepdad, when my mom got remarried, was, a rageaholic as well as an alcoholic and just beat us purple for the stupidest reasons. And then I added and compounded more trauma to that through, wartime PTSD. I joined the Army at 19. My first war zone was 8 days after September 11th. And that was really strange because, as a veteran, as a combat veteran, already having orders knowing that we're going to go to war, for 6 months. And to have that happen and feel like we're being attacked, I felt afraid and I felt, trapped and many of the same feelings that I felt when I was a victim of childhood trauma and childhood abuse because I couldn't really get myself out of that. There's no way I could have protected myself. And it was inevitable that I was just going to go in, into a bit of what seemed like, the belly's beast. And, there's, a long story, but effectively, what I learned is to ask better questions. For so long, I would just look for logical answers. And, Niels Bohr, the famous, physicist in quantum mechanics, his son, wrote him a letter and complaining and about the confusion and just how confusing, physics is. And he told him, well, you're not really thinking, you're just being logical. And I found that all throughout my life, for so long, I would only lean on the left side of my brain. And when I did that, I basically would revert to like a toddler who didn't want to eat their vegetables that they've never tried. And so the second that I'd hear something that didn't sound logical, I'd fold my arms and like, no, I don't like it. And I find that I wasn't the only one. Seems like the vast majority of people do very similar things. And I found myself in a place where I was in the dark night of my soul. My world was falling apart. There was just so much chaos. And I started listening to Jordan B. Peterson's biblical lectures on Genesis and how he was secularizing the Bible. And how this is deep wisdom that's passed down from generation to generation through oral histories and oral traditions. And it's never meant to be taken literally. And that made so much sense to me. And so based upon the spirit of that idea, I asked myself, well, is there room for God in my life? And I had a vision in about 2 weeks, and following that vision led me to creating my highest ideal of goodness, of which I can conceive, which is my approximation of, what it is to be God in the flesh, but specifically to make myself worthy of it by becoming it and transform my life.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. That's cool. What a cool story. So when you brought God into your life, what did you notice? What shifts
For one, I find that most people, when they say, I believe in God, they're saying, I believe in the three-letter word that my priest told me, or the three-letter word that my pastor told me, or that my parents told me, or that I was born into, or that the strict set of rules that don't allow me to deviate from based upon what the congregation believes. And so first off, it was about, well, what is God to me? right? Well, you know, is there room for God in my life in a way in which I am totally okay with viewing God and not looking at the mirror and saying, oh, that's, you know, the heavenly Father, right? And what I just that limitations of what I see, because so often, you know, we impose upon, you know, the Almighty, these human limitations, you know, anger, wrath, jealousy, and, you know, you better not act, you know, in a inappropriate way, or else you're going to get a spanking and you're going to get a finger wagging from heaven, right? And that didn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. So I really, you know, I'm big in editorializing, you know, articles. I've got, you know, several editorials and letters to the editor published here in the two largest newspapers here in Utah. So when I created my highest ideal of goodness, I really meant to be a bridge from the secular communities and the religious communities and share ideas and bring in ideas from like the Tao Te Ching, just ancient wisdom. And rather than just throw everything out and say, well, only this, you know, limited space is what I can call God. Well, if God is omnipresent and omniscient, well, God is everything. And so let me find out a way in which I can, you know, embody that in a way that makes me better and makes those around me better.
Mm. And I'm sure, do you use that when you're working with others, coaching and healing?
Yeah. So a big part of what I do is not just, you know, healing people and helping them release their trauma and release, you know, their state of dis-ease, but also set them on a path to walk, to step into that life as well and create, hey, what is your highest ideal of goodness? Let's start extracting some of that. Let's build some powerful modalities around that and get you set onto a path where you can really start to step into that in for the same, you know, in the same way.
Yeah. And I'm assuming you find when people do that, does physical stuff tend to get better? I find in my practice when my patients kind of have moved past the physical stuff and they are like, oh, you know, I've been diving into spirituality. It's like they move to a new paradigm and their physical ailments just kind of melt away, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so many, you know, issues that we, you know, hold on to, especially as Americans, right? It's so normal for us to feel like we're our own worst enemy. And if we're our own worst enemy, well, often we also, you know, feel like we need to shove down our emotions. Well, if we're shoving them down, well, what's the dimension lower than the mind? Well, it's the body. And so the, you know, the body's the densest form of energy that we've got, you know, that represents, you know, us. And that's what we're going to hold on to. And if we are constantly beating ourselves up, I mean, doesn't it kind of make sense that our body would start to fall apart?
Yeah, so crazy. And I like how you explained that, like shoving down emotions, and it's like moving from here down to into the physical body, because it's so true. If you don't express an emotion, it will, that energy turns into some sort of physical thing in the body.
Yeah,
not necessarily always bad, but tends to be. It turns into something. It has to go somewhere, right? That energy. So let's have a convo, or maybe you can kind of share how you think about when you're working with someone with trauma and they typically have physical ailments. I mean, have you ever worked with anyone with trauma who doesn't have some sort of physical manifestation of that?
At least not ones that they really complain about, right? They might have like a sore back, right? That's just like, hey, I'm used to that. And when you know, deal with the childhood trauma or the PTSD, then usually that will resolve itself because, you know, the back is, you know, especially the back, right? That's where we carry our burdens. In fact, we even talk about, you know, carrying our burdens. And so even when we think about it, we might even feel small and kind of scrunch our back and hunch our back a bit. And so with that, what I found is, you know, and like I said, I'm a big fan of the Tao Te Ching, and the Tao Te Ching is all about getting to a flow state, and, you know, everything's energy, and whether these negative thoughts that we're shoving down or positive thoughts that we're, you know, elevating, you know, everything's energy. And if we're shoving things down and we're stopping that flow, well, what happens is, you know, if you look at water, if water quits flowing, well, it starts to stagnate. And what's attracted to stagnating water? Well, you've got mosquitoes, parasites, viruses, bacteria, things that drain the lifeblood or poison the lifeblood. And, you know, so we can feel that, and we can feel how trauma can do that to the body. And then if you go to the mind, well, if you go to the mind, well, you know, are there examples where we can see maybe a thought virus at play? Well, again, as an American, absolutely. The only thing you have to do is walk into a room of crowded people, and it's pretty sad to see it happen, especially when it's around people who like each other. And all you have to do is say one of three names. You don't have to say anything else other than the name. And just walk in and say Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, or Donald Trump. And immediately people will act like they just got possessed by an agent of the Matrix. And what happens is people become so rigid and they're, you know, so inflexible, and they demand that their truth is the only truth, even though they've never held public office. They've never been part of a political campaign, but all of a sudden their brilliance and what they've heard from other people, well, then that'll solve the world. And so they immediately start attacking and coming from this, from a bit of a nasty paradigm. And coming back to the Tao, right? There's this verse that when man is born, he's soft and supple. When a plant is born, it's soft and pliable. When man dies, he's stiff and rigid. When a plant dies, it's dry and brittle. Therefore, those who are rigid and inflexible are disciples of death. And those who are soft and flexible are disciples of life. It doesn't mean that you're a good person or a bad person. It just means that you're inviting death into your sphere, into your field. And when we do that, well, that's where things start breaking down. That's when we're, the body, as it keeps itself healthy, the immune system, as it keeps itself healthy, well, then you're adding entropy, where the rules start to break down, and then you start disrupting that flow, and then you start inviting those parasites. And then when it comes to the spiritual realm, where you may not be able to see these spiritual parasites, but then you've got these spiritual afflictions. And so if the spirit itself, the soul itself, is being drained, well, then the body and the mind will break down as a natural consequence. And if the spirit is at full power, well, then the body and the mind will also heal as a natural consequence. And it's important to understand that this is a map, right? In the same way that if I pull up GPS to drive somewhere, right, I'm not actually driving on my GPS. My GPS is not the roads that I'm taking, but it's a meaningful map to help me get to my destination. And so it's important to use these maps, understand that it's a map and not the territory, but to make sure that we, create these maps that help us travel through life and travel through to a destination that'll serve us and serve us around us.
Oh, that was a lot. That was a really great explanation. I really like that. Thank you for sharing that. I'm like,
you're welcome.
So many things to, you've given me a lot to think about. So tell me about the work that you do, the work that you do with people.
Yeah. Well, first off, as I mentioned before, the mind is so caught up in the logical paradigm. And, if there's anything that I learned from data analytics in pediatrics, is you got to quiet the noise to increase the signal. Well, what did Lao Tzu, who wrote the Tao Te Ching, what did he say? To the still mind, the entire universe surrenders. And so one, we've got to be able to, still the mind. And we do that through meditation. And through meditation, what happens is you allow the mind to become the antenna that it was always meant to be. So often people think that the mind is how we need to get places. I'm a big fan of Ken Wilber, who has this idea of the centaur awareness. And the centaur awareness is, this idea of, the mythical beast, the half man, half horse. And so often people, again, who feel like they're their own worst enemy, feel like they need to beat themselves in order to run faster or in order to do better. But a centaur just wills himself to run faster. He doesn't put his hands in some boots and some spurs and jab himself in the groin in order to run faster. He just runs faster. And so with that, once we quiet the mind, well, the heart, right? And we can measure this too, that, the heart has 40,000 neurons inside of it. So it's got its own brain. And it's constantly sending signals to the mind and to the brain. Well, we usually just dismiss those, right? And dismiss our intuition, dismiss our intuitive thoughts and what we know comes from within. And when the mind is relaxed, well, what happens is we already know that the brain can access more dimensions than our body can. And so now we have this energy that's going through. And, with that, Niels Bohr, again, coming back to him, said that everything that we call real is made up of things that cannot be considered real. Einstein said everything is energy. And so now when we're sending that energy and we're connecting to something higher, to a higher space, to a divine space, well, then the mind, since it's relaxed, is no longer trying to act like the engine. It's now acting like the rudder it's supposed to be in order to direct that flow and where it needs to go, rather than try and control everything and stop that flow. And that's really the biggest part, and getting that mind chatter quieted. And it was very difficult for me until I, myself got a mentor and had somebody, bring me through. And that's actually some of the biggest feedback I've got is that, as I'm guiding people, they say, I've never been able to get that deep in meditation before, like mind blown.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because a brain that's been through trauma tends to be kind of stuck in that monkey chatter, fight, flight kind of state. And it's, I hear from my patients all the time, I can't meditate, I can't quiet my mind. But I love that you said that you found a mentor, because I think it's so important if you're trying to do this work, anything of healing, to have someone to hold space for you, to walk you through it, to help you, because it's not easy, right? If you're going from that state of a trauma brain to then be like, oh, hey, let me quiet my mind and chill out. It's the hardest things right. you'll ever do. So yeah. Do you have some, like, for listeners, if they're like, wow, I can't meditate, how do I really want to get there? Because that sounds so awesome. I want to do that. I mean, obviously find a mentor, find someone to help you, I think is step number one. But if they're kind of working on their own, like, what do you have any special tips for, like, if someone's starting a meditation practice, where would you have them go?
Well, if they want to make it easier rather than, you know, just go to the gym confused and not really sure what to do and just find yourself sore and then not really doing anything efficient. Well, if they go to my website at freemefrompains.com, right, you can, there's a healing plan. And not only can we, you know, assess a healing plan where so many people are so focused on what they don't want. I don't want to feel fear. I don't want that trauma. I don't want to be in this space, right? And we can't go to the airport and or go online to buy an airline ticket and be like, hey, I just want a ticket to not here, please. Or go into the train station, I just want a ticket to not here, please, because it just doesn't work that way. And then I've got some free meditations that I can send you as well in order to start help training that the brain and help the guide in order to relax that. Because ultimately, anything that's unfamiliar, the mind's going to perceive threat. And so when we are running from trauma, right? Because that's, frankly, that's typically what people do is they run from trauma. Well, then if you sit with it, well, that certainly doesn't feel very, very fun.
Doesn't feel good. No.
Exactly. And so the mind is going to immediately, one, it's unfamiliar to try and quiet the mind. So there's threat there. Two, I'm no longer running from my trauma. And now I'm allowing it to catch me. Well, that seems pretty threatening as well. And so understanding how to feel safe is a fundamental part of this.
And is that something you would suggest, like you were saying before, like everyone kind of is like, I don't want this. Would you suggest like being like, I want to feel, or kind of identifying what the wants are? And is that usually one of them? I want to feel safe.
Well, so that's a great question. Now, inherently in this idea of I want to feel safe is I don't feel safe.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
And so what's stronger and more powerful, right? If you look at like great mystics like Neville Goddard, you know, from the early 1900s, right? What's stronger than I want to feel safe is, well, I am safe.
Got it. So speaking like it already is.
Yeah. Speaking like it already is. And then also understanding the power of I am. Mm. Right. So this is the me, right? My body is me, but I am is something greater. And in fact, we see that all over, right? And the Bible is written in a way, again, that's not supposed to be taken literally. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Not Jesus is the only way, right? That's the way, you know, in order to be controlled. Well, then, well, Jesus, somebody special, but what did he say? Hey, even the least amongst you can do as much and more in my name. And so we all have access to that same I am. And so when we say I am, most people say, I am arthritic. Yeah. I am diabetic.
This is such a big one. I'm so glad you brought this up. People identify with their pain points or their diagnosis. And it's like, you're just going to continue in that space.
Well, and then you're going to be drowning out the spiritual realm. And the spiritual realm is effectively the superset, right? So when Niels Bohr said that everything that we call real is made up of things that cannot be considered real, well, that means that what is controlling reality, and we can prove this in physics, is the non-physical, right? Because it's a wave of light, a wave of possibility that gets collapsed into particle matter reality. And, you know, Einstein said that everything is energy. You know, my keyboard, my microphone, my headphones, right? This is nothing more than energy that's slowed down to such a degree that we can actually see it. And we can measure that as well, you know, because again, the speed of light, well, that's about 186,000 miles a second. But the speed from our eyes to our brain is about 250 miles an hour. And so things have to be rapidly slowed down. So it's a different paradigm. And so when we get in that feeling, in that space of I am already feeling that, well, you know, the feeling is the secret. And putting yourself in that space and rediscovering, well, who that great I am is, well, one, it can start off with, well, you know, who do I want to be? And you'll learn to ask better questions, because questions are the steering wheel of the mind. And if we just look for answers, well, then we get an answer, but we're still the same person and don't really know what to do with it. But if we ask a better question, what happens is that we open up a path for us to explore and discover, and higher wisdom can only be discovered. And that's that parable of, you know, beware of casting pearls amongst swine. You may know exactly how to help somebody or what advice that they might, you know, that they might need to take in order to help them out of their rut. But if they haven't discovered it themselves, you know, if you want it more than they do, you might actually ruin that relationship.
Yeah, it's got to come from that.
Yeah.
I liked how you touched on like getting into alignment with that feeling. I find with some of my patients, they're like, I can't quiet my mind. I can't practice meditation. And we'll talk about it, like, you know, how do you want to feel? And they'll say, well, I want to feel excited and happy. And so I'm like, just think about whatever makes you feel that. Like, and if you can focus on that and just cultivate that feeling, that in and of itself is a form of meditation. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. And so let's say that you know, do a Google search of images. Or, okay, well, you know, how do I want to feel? Okay, well, I want to feel happy. Okay, well, what are things that I do? Right. That, and then, you know, get me feeling, you know, happy. Okay. Well, maybe it's a vacation, you know, with my family. Okay. Well, what kind of vacation? Well, maybe it's a tropical vacation. Okay. Well, can I print out pictures of a tropical paradise and put it on my wall? And then for 5 minutes at a time, stand up in all of my majesty and stare at that picture and imagine how it would feel to have my family there. And put myself in it and immerse myself in it. And as you do, well, then you start creating different neurochemicals throughout your body. And what happens, what a lot of people don't understand is, right, there's this idea of cell inertia, right? If we're constantly beating ourselves up, well, the body is an incredibly adaptive machine, which means that all this grossness, all this gook and all these, you know, the cortisol and all the stress hormones that we're releasing in our body, well, all of our cells have membranes around them to be informed of what environment they're in. Hey, are we in sunshine or are we in rain? And when you're constantly raining on yourself for years and years and years, and you try one day of sunshine, it's going to feel very unfamiliar. And to a place that's used to rain, it's going to say, hey, that sunshine is threatening. And so what happens is the more that we do this, well, the more that we then allow ourselves to reprogram our cellular structure, break that cell inertia, and then start to ease ourselves into this place where then sunshine becomes a natural state.
Yeah. So it's just practicing the feeling over and over again. It's almost like what you just, it's like daydreaming, essentially. I sometimes tell my patients, I'm like, do you ever daydream? They're like, yeah. I'm like, great. That's meditation. Just amplify it a little bit. Get into the details. And the more you practice that, like you said, the more it's going to feel familiar, which I think it's just so amazing how powerful our brains are. And like you were talking about, you know, your brain is in that state and you're literally going to change the physiology of your body, which is so cool, good or bad. You know, you could, I have a lot of patients with pretty severe health anxiety and, you know, they're constantly Googling their symptoms and they'll look at their labs and they're convinced they have XYZ. And I tend to have a little bit of a hypochondriac part of myself as well. And, you know, but you can literally like work yourself up and make symptoms worse when you start, you know, worrying about them.
Oh, 100%. Because the thing is the mind doesn't understand. It doesn't know the difference between imagination and reality. And in fact, coming back to Einstein, he even said that, you know, intellect isn't based on raw computing power. It's literally imagination. And we've got studies, whether it be Joe Dispenza, where, you know, they've actually taken people and had a control group that did nothing, had an experimental group that just closed their eyes and imagined themselves playing piano. So they were taught the different chords.
Yeah.
They imagined themselves playing it. And then they actually had people playing it. And so the people playing it and the people imagined themselves playing it were actually activating the exact same neural pathways. And so if we are imagining and putting ourselves in the stress of, oh my God, look what WebMD says I have. I must have a tumor. Well, guess what your brain's doing? Brain's like, oh, okay, so this is what we're supposed to be manifesting. Okay, well, here we go. Let's go ahead and manifest this.
Yeah, so it's your thoughts are very, very powerful.
Yeah.
So, all right, we've got the free resource on your website. Do you work with people? Tell me about how you work with people. Virtual person, what's the?
Yeah, virtual. I've actually worked with people, you know, all around the world, you know, from New Zealand, Germany. You know, I actually had a very wonderful lady. I put on a digital summit where I interviewed 19 different experts from around the world, you know, from, you know, neuroscientists to, you know, spiritual healers, you know, shamans. And it's funny how pretty much everyone had their own approximation of the same idea, that everything is flow. And when we get into that flow state, well, then we find ourselves in a place where we're actually, you know, building the structures necessary to, you know, to excel. And, you know, coming back to Lao Tzu, right? He said, you know, You know, thoughts lead to words, words lead to actions, actions lead to habits, habits lead to character, character leads to your destiny. Or as Joe Dispenza says, right, the habits lead to your personality and your personality creates your personal reality.
Like
and
it.
So, yeah, so it's really about unpacking, hey, what's the problem? I don't need a huge backstory. You know, I don't need to know, you know, like all the details of their trauma, just, hey, childhood trauma. You know, I like to connect them to, is there somebody meaningful in your life, right? Maybe that's Jesus. Maybe that's Buddha. Maybe that's their mom. Maybe that's their grandma, right? Whatever. And really use that love of that person to open themselves up, because love is what heals. Love is what connects us. And when, you know, and when we allow that love to permeate through every cell of our body, well, it just opens up all those energy networks, all those different chakras. And then when we connect that to something higher and something greater, as well as create our highest ideal of goodness, well, then we're like a magnet. We're drawing it to us and we're also drawing ourselves to it.
Super cool. Anything else you want to share? Any last little tips or ideas or thoughts?
You know, being able to just snap your fingers and then all of a sudden, you know, turn your, you know, quiet your mind is not necessarily the most realistic. And so if you are in a place where you're constantly worried, constantly looking at WebMD, constantly, you know, in a state of anxiety and fear, you know, just understand that when you close your eyes, you're not there to shut off your thoughts, right? Because if you try to use thought to cancel thoughts, well, if you bring energy to something, you energize it. So you're only going to make it worse. And the best thing to do is to detach from your thoughts and just be an observer. Hey, what thoughts am I having? And just watch them. Don't try to change them. Don't try to alter them. Just focus on your breathing and just watch your thoughts. And as you start to distance yourself from your thoughts, well, you can understand that you have thoughts. You aren't your thoughts. And the more that you can do that, well, then the more that you can start to influence yourself. And breathing is a wonderful way in order to start calming the nervous system. And with our eyes closed, well, then we're also shutting down, you know, all the data that the mind is trying to process. So then we can really allow ourselves to figure out, hey, you know, what is important to me? Is it that vacation? Is it just to be a great, you know, father or mother or, you know, son or daughter or whatever? And that can really allow us to figure out, you know, again, what is important to us? And then start off small. Find something small and build upon it, right? Don't start off so big that, you know, hey, I've never climbed a mountain before, so let me go climb Everest. That's a great way to die on your way up to the summit, right? Yeah. And get frozen. And so start off small. So that way you can get these micro wins and then say, hey, good for you. Look what I just did. Awesome. Awesome. I feel a little bit better. And those micro wins could be that 5-minute, you know, little screen test, so to speak, that I mentioned about printing out a picture that you like and staring at it and imagine yourself being there and just summon that feeling.
Awesome. So thank you for sharing all of this. It's a lot.
My pleasure.
A lot to think about. And you clearly are a master healer. So we'll put your website in the show notes. Would you want to say it real fast where people can go?
Yeah, you can go to freemefrompains.com. Awesome. And, you know, like I said, you know, I truly believe that anyone can heal from anything. It's just a matter of our belief. Where are our beliefs?
Yeah. Super cool. And anywhere else people can go to find you? Social media, do you hang out anywhere?
Yeah, so you can find me on Facebook. I spend most of my time on Facebook. I do Great. Have a small group there as well, you know, Healing Chronic Pain.
Great, cool. So go check him out. Clearly, he's got a lot of good resources and great ideas. Thank you so much for being on the show, Josh. It was great.
Hey, my pleasure. I really appreciate you holding the space. And I hope that this has been a value added, you know, show for those listening.
Yeah, really valuable. Thanks, guys. We'll see everyone next week.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Dr. Kinney Show. Be sure to follow the show and leave a rating and a review. It supports me so much. Plus, I always love hearing from you guys. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll talk to you next week.